going on, everybody? From the College of Professional and Continuing Education, I'm Dr. Pahulz Koskan with Pacing Your Future, a podcast that charts the course of today's most exciting industries and the people that help shape them. Discover the many opportunities within the numerous fields we cover and be inspired by the stories of notable individuals who have paved their own paths. And just like our name suggests, our mission is to pace ahead, be proactive, adaptable, creative, and engaged. Whether you're seeking career insights, industry trends, or are just simply inquisitive, let's pace your future together. And today we're joined by Hannah Grieser, a thought leader and influential voice at Lightcast, where she aims to start important conversations on workforce development and labor market trends. With an extensive background in both visual and written communication, Hannah now focuses her skills on researching, visualizing, and sharing data on labor market trends that are shaping the future of work. Most recently, she co-authored the insightful new report, The Rising Storm, Building a Future-Ready Workforce to Withstand the Looming Labor Shortage, which sheds light on the demographic shifts, social factors, technological developments, and economic forces that are driving major misalignments and talent shortages across the labor market. Through this report and her ongoing work at Lightcast, Hannah hopes to equip educators, employers, policymakers, and communities across the U.S. to make data-informed decisions as we face the workforce challenges ahead. And today, Hannah is joining us from Idaho through a video call. Thank you for joining us, Hannah.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. Glad to be.
So we usually start this podcast with something fun and a fun question. So imagine that your industry is a main character in a blockbuster movie because LA. What's the plot and who are its main characters?
Oh, boy. I think you're about to discover why I did not go into screenwriting. But at Lightcast, we're a labor market data company, and we're into, you know, economics. So from that perspective, I'd say, you know, like if I were to write a movie about what we do, it's kind of like bringing different groups of people together to deal with the problems that are happening. And right now, like this report is it's called The Rising Storm. So maybe it'd be like a dystopian setting where there's a huge storm rising off the coast and you've got people mysteriously disappearing and everyone that's left is wondering what's happening and how do we get by without these people. And, you know, the hero would be somebody who, you know, comes to bring people together who are all trying to solve their problems in different ways and gets them to work together to start making innovations and things like that. This is, I hope this story ends well. It's a TBD. Maybe it's a multi-part movie, but that's my terrible, plot for my blockbuster movie.
You are the J.R.R. Tolkien of our time. So you work at Lightcast. What makes Lightcast a global leader in labor market analytics? And how does it help businesses, communities, and educational institutions make data-driven decisions?
Oh, wow. How do I count the ways? So Lightcast provides labor market data from multiple different sources. So job postings, when a company posts a job online, we're able to gather that data. And we have worker profiles, including like alumni data from different institutions, right up to government data sources. So things like the Census Bureau and the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And we're always adding new data and correcting for any potential, you know, things like hallucinations that sometimes happen with things that you gather online. So we have a incredible data team that's always updating. And we have multiple countries covered. So we make that data available in a lot of different ways, including like software tools so that people can do their own research, you know, look up whatever's important for their university or business or region. We provide custom dashboards so you can share that information in a public way online, and or you can use APIs, you can import our data into your own tools. And we also have a whole team of analysts and economists that will provide custom analysis of data that you specifically want to understand for whatever part of the economy you're in. So probably a million different ways to use Lightcast and find out all kinds of things that you need to know in order to make really good decisions.
So, you know, a lot of what you talked about was how your company is very data-driven and has a team of researchers. And I know that you co-authored the report of Rising Storm, which is a comprehensive report, right? Can you summarize the key findings of this report and the implications of the labor market?
Yeah, so I would say that the Rising Storm is really, we wrote it to offer kind of a 30,000 foot view of what's happening in the labor market, because it's very easy to get siloed into your like specific concerns. Like if I'm at a hospital and I'm trying to hire nurses, that's my big concern. And the reason we wrote this is to help people like zoom out and see like, okay, the specific problem that you're facing in your industry or your job is actually not happening in isolation. It's part of a much bigger story that's happening across the country and even around the world. That's why we wrote The Rising Storm, is just to kind of give people that bigger picture view of all these different factors. So we touched on it a little bit in the introduction, but we look at things like the demographic shifts that are happening. So we have a lot more retirees leaving the workforce than we have young people that are coming up and entering the workforce. So just basic math problem. We also look at other demographic issues, like the differences between how men are interacting with the labor force and women are interacting with the labor force. So we're seeing, like, for example, women who are getting the majority of college degrees now, about 60%. And we're seeing men, particularly in that like prime age group, 25 to 54 years old, gradually dropping out of the labor force. And that's impacting specific types of jobs that have been typically dominated by prime age men. So things like the skilled trades, so construction or mining, things like that. So if you're in one of those sectors, that demographic change is going to be affecting your business probably more than, say, some industry. We also look at things like social challenges that are keeping people out of the labor force. So things like the issue with substance abuse in the country. We look at incarceration numbers and how many people are affected by that. We also look into the issue of immigration, very hot button issue right now. And not to drive, you know, some kind of political opinion, but just to make sure people are informed so they know where our workers are coming from and how the decisions that are being made are going to affect that. And then we look at the widespread education mismatches that are happening. So we've got, you know, people getting degrees that don't necessarily have a corresponding job in the labor market. And we've got a lot of jobs that don't require degrees at all that are suffering labor shortages right now. So all these things are happening and kind of converging at the same time. So we cover a lot of ground, but really just wanted to help people zoom out and see the big picture. And then how these things play out is going to vary widely depending on where you live and what kind of business or role you're in. And so it's like nationwide global factors, but they need to be solved with sort of local decision making.
So you talk about bigger picture and having folks see the wide landscape of the labor market and the research that is done there from you guys. But thinking about it in a more granular level, how do individuals leverage the insights from the Rising Storm and identify and develop the skills needed to help them with the workforce demands of the future?
So I would say that the report really should serve as a starting point, and then just to help you sort of see what are the forces pushing on the part of the labor market that you're in. And when we get down to like the skills needed, that's pretty granular data. But one of the ways to start is to look, okay, so where are the biggest labor shortages happening? And one of the things we highlight is that we expect labor shortages to be most intense in industries like healthcare, which is in high demand because A, we're an aging population, and B, there are not a lot of different places you can get workers from. So like if you're in tech, you can hire people who live overseas and work remotely. You can get people by means of immigration. You can use a lot of automation, things like AI. There's a lot of different ways to get work done in the tech sector. Healthcare is very hands-on, very local, very in-person. And so your options are much more limited and demand is just on the rise. So we look at a situation like that and say, okay, this is where labor shortages are going to be probably most intense. Then what you need to look at if you're in the world of trying to decide what to do for your job, you need to look at those areas as also the biggest opportunities for job seekers. So if I know there's a huge labor shortage coming for construction, I might consider a career in construction because I know my job is going to be in high demand. People need me, and there's a lot of opportunity out there if I'm willing to do that kind of work. Those are ways you can use this data to, at the individual level, to decide where to go. And once you know which industry you're considering, then you can start to look at the data underneath that. There's a lot of, if you're a job seeker, it's a lot of workforce boards, career offices that use our skills data to help you look at your own skills. So there's even a tool we have on the Lightcast webpage called the Skills Extractor, which is really cool. And I'd actually totally forgotten about it till a colleague of mine mentioned it this week. But you can upload your own resume and it'll spit out a list of the skills that you've got listed in your resume in a nice little neat little list. But the extra cool thing is it'll add a list of suggested skills that are commonly found with the ones that you've already listed. So that if you forgot to add those, like let's say, you know, I'm a graphic designer and I upload my resume and I've said Photoshop and InDesign, but I forgot Illustrator, it'll suggest that. I'm like, oh yeah, I should add that. I do know Illustrator. But it'll also help you find ways that you can upskill. Like, so if there's things that are commonly listed and commonly asked for, you should know, like, oh, this is something that other people with my skill set are listing and I don't have that skill. I should find a class or, you know, enroll in some kind of a program that can maybe provide that skill for me. So that's where skills data can become really invaluable. It can help us identify the additional skills we need to take those next steps to improve our chances of getting a good job. And it can help businesses list the skills they need in a better way. And it can help the people doing the, you know, job training or education to make sure they're providing those skills and helping their students understand what skills they're coming out of their program with. So lots of different ways to kind of tie those things together to help people find a great career.
That's great. I think what it sounds like is that the skills extractor helps identify things that people may forget, and it just is an assist, right? So that's great that you guys offer that. Hannah, you previously gestured to retirees and the younger generation. How do general shifts impact the workforce, and what are the primary industries that will be impacted by this generational shift?
Great question. And this is one we're still sort of navigating right now. One of the things we point out is that we're at what's called, you know, peak 65, which is the most people turning 65 that we'll ever have. And that's affecting the number of retirements, a huge number of retirements happening. And there's this saying that you'll sometimes hear called demography is destiny, like the shifts in people, especially by, you know, ages, it makes inevitable changes. And there's kind of a grain of truth in that. It's not exactly, I wouldn't say 100% true, but there's a grain of truth in it, especially when it comes to how people are aging, because these shifts impact the workforce in a lot of ways. So every generation interacts with the workforce differently because of the circumstances they're born into, right? So we talk in the report about the baby boomers in particular, because they were this huge influx of people that were entering the labor force and starting like in the 70s. So because there were so many of them and there were so many entering the workforce at the same time, it created a mindset of like job scarcity and really stiff competition for the same set of jobs. So you're up against all these other people who want the job that you want, and you've got to do all these things to make sure that you set yourself apart some way. So that's really where we saw college enrollments take off in a really big way. And it kind of shaped the mindset that is still present today. Like, everybody should get a degree if you really want to improve your job prospects. And for a long time, that's been really true. You know, it's still true in a lot of ways. But we're starting to see, you know, as there are more opportunities in non-degree sectors, that wages are rising in those areas. And now you can see some of these shifts taking place. The other thing that happens with like a generational difference between the baby boomers and say today is that in the boomer generation, if you're competing with all these other people and there's a lot of unemployment because you're, you know, you're looking for a job and you're not getting it because there's 20 other people who are ahead of you in line for the same job, the like political policy emphasis on economy is job creation. We got to create more jobs so that all these people who are looking for work can get one, right? Well, that's just not really the world we live in anymore. And so that's because demographics have changed. We have, we're expected to lose about 2 million 16 to 24 year olds over the next 10 years or so. And that means don't have as many people looking for work. We've got a lot of jobs that are sitting unfilled. So now the focus needs to be less on like, we need more jobs. And the focus needs to shift toward being, we need to align the jobs to the people that we have, because they're a more scarce resource. To that second part of your question, aligning the people and the jobs is really the new focus. So the industries that are affected are obviously going to be affected by who the people are that are needing goods and services. So if you're a generation like the silent generation that had a lot of kids with a lot of big families, you need the products and the services that young families use, right? So, you know, toys and diapers and elementary schools and things like single family homes. And when we start to see fewer people having kids and more people in that 55 plus population, the demand shifts, right? So now we have more demand in industries that provide the things that an older population needs. So retirement facilities, healthcare is, you know, something that we've mentioned quite a bit. So as demand changes, it's very much tied to those generational shifts, and which industries are on the rise and which ones are going to be declining are very closely aligned with those sorts of supply and demand questions.
Speaking of shifts then, what are the primary drivers that do you see are behind the rapid changes in skill requirements across various industries?
We just at Lightcast Report put out a report called The Speed of Skill Change. It's available to download online, but the three areas where we're seeing a lot of skills shifting are due to the adoption of AI technologies. And big emphasis in the economy on sustainability, green jobs, things like that. That's fairly recent. And then cybersecurity. So one of the reasons these jobs have rapidly changing skills is just because the nature of the work is changing so quickly. Mm-hmm. So like if you're an accountant, 50 years ago, you didn't need to worry about cyber attacks, right? But today, that's critically important because you have all these people's like social security numbers and tax papers and stuff probably on some digital platform. And if that gets breached, then your business is going to be in big trouble. So cybersecurity is a huge concern. And so the skills that a basic accountant needs are going to be a lot more digital than they were in the past. And we're starting to also see that even as jobs that are affected by these rapid changing skills are growing, we also need to think about this sort of set of skills that we call either like human skills or durable skills. They're the kind of skills that really are very stable, that don't change over time. So ironically, as these, you know, high-tech skills are changing, it's almost increasingly important to make sure that we're also training people to have skills like leadership, communication, teamwork, things that, you know, an AI bot can't replace, and things that remain kind of like evergreen, right? So if the job that you take suddenly shifts rapidly or even disappears, you have this set of enduring skills that remain applicable across all kinds of different roles in the labor market. So those continue to provide value even if these very specialized skills shift.
It's interesting, like you were talking about these evergreen and enduring skill sets, and I'm wondering, I mean, this isn't a question just me thinking out loud, but, you know, how has social media and like the era of social media hindered a lot of people from having these skills, right? And how do folks relearn these certain social etiquette, social skills to go out into the world to find these jobs, right? Kind of having to relearn how to be human again, I guess, in the workplace. So another thing that you're mentioning or you're gesturing to is workers need to evolve, as do their skill sets. But at the same time, I'm assuming that businesses and corporations change as well and have to adapt as well. How are corporations shifting their hiring processes then to focus on skills-based criteria rather than degree-based qualifications? And what impact is this having on the job market and workforce development?
Oh, interestingly, it's one of those things where it's a hot topic, skills-based hiring, and everyone's pretty much agrees that we need to make that shift. It's very hard. It's a very hard shift to make, though, without the data. So a degree used to really be the currency of the labor market because it was sort of a shorthand for having a set of skills. And the faster skills change, the less simple it is to just assume that like your computer science degree is equipping you with the exact set of, say, coding languages that your business needs. So this reliance on the degree as shorthand is changing, and especially in tech. So you have to show that you've got the specific knowledge needed. If you're applying for a job, it's important that you know what skills you have. It's also important if you're a college or job training institution of some sort, that you're aware of what skills you're providing and able to list them out so that your students can then put those in their resumes. And we're seeing businesses hiring based on these unique skill sets more and more, not just degrees. So again, I'd point people back, like if you just want a free thing to try out, use that skills extractor as an individual. But this is really where like skills data is one of the areas where Lightcast really shines. So I would just encourage people to take a look at the data that we have and how you can use it to match people to jobs who you might have overlooked initially because they don't necessarily have like the piece of paper that you were originally listing as a requirement. And as labor shortages continue to loom, it's important to open that door wider to more people and using skills as a way to see that you're getting the right talent for your role is going to be more and more important. But I think there's a lot of room for growth here, that people are starting to make that shift, but it's a slow process. And I think those who start to adopt that language of skills, both on the providing skills side and the requiring skills side, those are the people that are going to actually succeed the most quickly moving forward.
Hannah, what you just mentioned kind of reminded me, since we're at the College of Professional and Continuing Education, we deal with a lot of non-credit programs. Like, and you were talking about the evolution of degree-based skills to just having certain skill sets. How important do you think non-credit programs are to the labor market and developing folks for this new workforce environment?
In this evolving labor market, I think they're going to be actually increasingly important because, for a couple reasons. One of the big reasons is just if there's a labor shortage in these areas that are actually very critical to basic, you know, infrastructure, like you need people helping build roads and repair buildings and, you know, utilities and things like this. Healthcare, obviously, again, we need people in those jobs quickly. And we don't have the luxury in a lot of cases to wait 4 years for people to go through a complete program. So providing either supplemental skills while someone's getting their degree can be really effective, but also providing getting businesses to kind of work in tandem with these skills earned through other means than the traditional 4-year degree is going to be huge. So I'll just use my own son as an example. Okay. I have a 20-year-old son working on his college degree. He would like to become a doctor someday. But We also have a shortage of these sort of entry-level healthcare roles like health aides and medical assistants, CNAs, things like that. So he got a job at a medical clinic in our area, and they are, he totally entry-level. He has no medical degree, right? So he is learning on the job, and they are paying for him to do an online medical assistant training program, and his in-clinic work is counting toward his hands-on credits for that credential. So it's just a certificate. It's not a degree. And when he finishes that, they have a fairly significant raise that they're going to give him. And then that allows him to use that medical assistant credential to do more tasks at the clinic. And then that also increases his chances of getting into med school later on because he has this hands-on medical experience. So it's really win-win-win. So he's able to serve people in an area that's in high demand. He's able to benefit this business, this medical business, and he's able to improve his own career prospects in the process. So this is this sort of triangular relationship between a business, a job seeker, and an education provider is, I think, the way of the future. And I'm super excited that he was able to find this opportunity. And there's a lot of creative ways that companies are doing this. They're working with online programs and other credential providers to help improve people's job prospects and help businesses out. There's just a lot of pluses and very few negatives to my mind.
Alternative pathways, right? So
that's right. Yeah. And he's going on to med school. That's the hope anyway. So it's not like instead of college, but it's augmenting his degree.
Yeah.
In an important way. So.
That's amazing. I just want to shift back because, I mean, we were talking about your son and it just made me think about generations. And so just shifting back to that discussion, as a baby boomer generation retires, a significant transfer of wealth is anticipated. How might this impact the workforce, positively or otherwise?
Huge TBD, but I think we're going to see a lot of people working less. Let's be real. Like probably the number one reason that people work is to put food on the table. And if you don't need to pursue a job, then many people won't. But the flip side of this is that if there's a transfer of wealth inherited from the older generations, we've also, like, over time gradually become a more affluent society on the whole. I mean, obviously not universally everywhere, but on the whole, people have a higher standard of living than our grandparents did. And what that means is we're used to that higher standard of living. And so we also spend more to maintain that standard of living. It's very hard to regress. Like if you've gotten used to living in a big house and buying all the name brand things and eating a certain way, it's hard to go back to living small and simple and frugally. So the question is, as Gen Z inherits money, are they also going to spend through it quickly? Because we also know that Gen Z has a lot of debt compared to previous generations. Yeah. So there's money, but there's also spending habits that draw off of that money. And so will those people eventually have to work, even if it didn't look originally like they had to? I think probably at some point, but just in sum, on the whole, if you have a lot of money and you don't have to work, you're probably not going to work at the same levels that you would have otherwise if you had to.
That makes sense. When we're talking about the younger generations, and because we're in an academic institution, Cal State Long Beach, what roles can educators play then to help address these issues with the labor shortage, the evolving market, whatnot? And what could be done to bridge the gap between retiring baby boomers and incoming younger workers?
So equipping a student, advisors with some of this data that's in the Rising Storm can be helpful. Like these are the places that there's going to be growth in demand for jobs. That's really helpful because, part of your value proposition as higher ed institutions is primarily job growth, you know, job opportunities that your degree provides. That's one of the big reasons people go to college. So your alumni are going to have the best opportunities if they're training and studying in programs that are aligned with those high areas of demand. So if you've got a student in your office who's like, yeah, I don't really know. I think kind of interested in nursing, but also kind of interested in finance. Just tell them like, well, you know, nursing. If for my money, this is where your big opportunity is in the future. You have job security for years and years to come. Whereas finance, there's a lot of inroads happening with AI taking over a lot of finance roles and tons of people going into it and not as many jobs available. So, you know, those sorts of just advisor level decisions, I think, are a huge way that educators can help. But also, I would even rewind a little more and start talking to students while they're still in high school. Like, yeah. early engagement is really important. One of the charts I shared in my presentation at Cal State, it's not in the report itself, but it's I've added it to the slide deck, is showing like teen labor force participation has fallen and fallen and fallen. It's rising slightly right now, but what that means is a lot of kids are not getting jobs in high school and not working during many of their college years too. So when they enter the labor market, they don't have much job experience, and that's a strike against them when they're applying for a job. So helping those kids consider where they can go with their career and then connecting them to job opportunities while they're still working as students. So internships and learn and earn programs, kind of like the one my son is doing right now, those sorts of things are ways that we can really improve the prospects for kids that are coming out of high school and then young adults that are going into the labor market from college, giving them some early exposure to these opportunities. And honestly, you're not going to choose a major in some topic that you haven't had any exposure to. There's a reason that kids who have had braces go into orthodontia. It's because they've been, you know, there's not a lot of people who are orthodontists who never had braces themselves. Well, why is that? Because early exposure. Like, you see how that environment looks and you could picture yourself in it. And we need to be able to help students picture themselves in these jobs that they may not know a lot about. And then obviously develop your programs and adapt them to the in-demand skills. That's where, again, just huge reliance on data is super important. So being able to look at skills that are growing in demand, skills that are declining in demand, and then shaping the programs that you offer to provide those growing and high demand skills is hugely important.
What's fascinating, Hannah, what you were just saying, just on the side note again, I think one of the programs that we have here at Cal State Long Beach, and we had Noel Hasagaba, Chief Operating Officer of the Port of Long Beach, come in as one of our first speakers. You know, we have a program at Cabrillo High School, the Academy of Global Logistics, where we teach high school students about supply chain, about the Port of Long Beach, about, you know, trade and transportation. And so giving them that exposure early on to kind of guide them to, well, these are career paths that I can possibly take. What you said just mirrored what a lot of the work that we're doing here. So
fantastic.
No, that's amazing. So I have one last question for you, and hopefully we can end on a positive note against the rising storm. What strategies do you recommend or see for building a future-ready workforce?
Oh, if I could just highlight one, it would be alignment, because I think this is the rising storm is an all hands on deck situation. So you can't solve it in isolation from the rest of the economy. If you're in higher ed, or if you're a business owner, or if you're a job seeker, or you're a policymaker, you can make good decisions, but it can't be made in isolation. So you have to see this big picture. You have to know, like, if you're a business and you discover, like, oh, you know, one in four of our employees in this particular role are immigrants, for example. You can't change that, but you could talk to your policymakers and say, okay, this is what our situation is. These people are important to our economy. How can we work together to make sure that we keep important products and services available to the people who live in our area? And how do we bring people along to fill jobs that are being emptied out by retirees? Well, we need to bring in educators. We need to bring in career training, possibly, you know, workforce boards and language services. All kinds of different interactions need to happen. Conversations need to happen across those sort of traditional silos. If we can't do that, then we're going to face a lot of problems where if we're not talking to each other. So the more we can keep those different sectors, people, educators, policymakers, and businesses in conversation in the same room together, the more progress I think we'll make toward addressing this rising storm issue. Kind of going back to my terrible screenplay at the beginning, I think the hero of the story is the person who can come in and bring these different groups together to address the problem instead of competing always with each other for attention and competing policies. If we can bring these people into the same room and say, okay, how can we address the problems ahead? Because healthcare matters. It matters to everyone. We all need it. How do we find the people? How do we train the people? How do we ensure that there's available options for as many people as possible, and then go from there?
Go together, right?
Do it together. Yes. And no, you have to know the data. Like, we're past the point where we can just kind of follow our gut and have these emotionally driven decisions being made. It's important to know, like, look at the numbers, know who you're dealing with, know where they are, know who they are, know what skills they have, know where they're in most demand, and then use that data in really strategic ways.
Great. That's perfect. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.
So any last thoughts or comments you want to make?
I would just say, if you haven't read the Rising Storm Report, please do download it. And if you don't have time, we actually have the whole report on Spotify as a podcast. And there's a video presentation as well on our website with my colleague and co-author, Ron Hetrick, presenting his similar presentation to what we shared at Cal State Long Beach. But I would really encourage anybody who hasn't read it to read it and know the lay of the land and make your decisions from there.
Thanks, Hannah. Thanks for joining Pacing Our Future.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Pacing Your Future. We hope today's installment has inspired you and provided valuable insights into the dynamic world of industry and innovation. Stay tuned with us for more stories, opportunities, and expert advice to help you navigate and shape your future. Until next time, keep pacing your future with confidence and curiosity.